Well, howdy, partners, again. It is such a thrill for me to be able to address you this year for the State of the Nation's immunization update. As some of you know, I've been spending the last several months on a temporary assignment away from the immunization family. And for me, today is like a homecoming. And you know, they say there's no place like home. So it's really great to be back and see all of you. While I've been gallivanting about the Office of the Director, and while Melinda Wharton has been gallivanting about the Immunization Safety Office, some exceptional people have stepped up to the plate to lead the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases, and I'd really like to publicly thank Dr. Beth Bell and Dr. Jane Seward for serving as acting director and acting deputy of our center. And I also want to publicly take this special chance to thank Lance Rodewald and Jeannie Santoli for being the heart and soul of our immunization program. Okay, so now that you've gotten a little exercise there. About a year ago, a lot of us gathered for the National Immunization Conference in Atlanta. Those of you who attended may remember that it took place on the heels of a tornado that struck downtown Atlanta right next to our hotel. The year that followed has been sometimes disorienting, a little bit more familiar, a little bit reminiscent of a more familiar tornado. And as we sometimes felt like Dorothy, wondering that it wasn't Kansas anymore, we've seen disillusionment and disappointment in some leaders of industry and investment, in some of our staples and sports heroes. It was, at times, it seemed like things were just coming apart. But we also did come together this past year. Millions gathered. Millions gathered in person or watched from around the country and around the globe as America's new president took office. He talked then about a new era of responsibility. He asked each of us to look inside ourselves, in our families, communities, and institutions, and see what we ourselves could do to make the changes that would get our country back on course. Now, those of you who've been attending the conference for the past few years know that I like to find a theme, a big, broad theme to help orient my remarks during the national update. Well, this year, in light of the fiscal crises and the economic challenges, I felt I too needed to economize. So this year, instead of a broad theme, I've selected a syllable. So for those of you who like to multitask, while I'm talking, keep an eye out for the syllable. Those of you younger people who want to Twitter, well, you can just do that with a syllable too. So President-elect Obama was Time Magazine's Person of the Year last year, but vaccines were Time's Baby of the Year. Our issue struck a chord with the public. Part of the story was about resurgence. In Minnesota, we heard of a resurgence of the Haemophilus influenza B condition, with 5 children suffering from this condition, including 1 death. It was more cases than they'd had since 1992. Initially, we thought it may be due to the shortage of Hib vaccine, but it turned out the parents had been offered vaccines. 3 of the 5 parents had declined or delayed or deferred vaccination. This was really a wake-up call to all of us. One of the children in this cluster died from Haemophilus influenza B. This bacteria is still around, and children who aren't immunized are totally susceptible to the condition of Hib. Now, a lot more media attention surfaced on measles. I like to show this map at most of the talks I give, but I was really excited about getting to show it today, because I know in this audience, so many of you know the stories behind those pink dots and the yellow dots. These aren't just dots. These are families that you contacted, doctor's offices, hospital exposures you were tracing. These are a huge amount of effort on the part of the frontline public health system. Because of what you did, and what you do every day, measles did not regain a foothold in the United States, and you interrupted transmission of this virus. It's the 20th anniversary of the big resurgence of measles that the U.S. experienced in 1989, and we don't want to go back there. But this resurgence in 2008, where we had more cases than we've seen since 1996, this resurgence was different. Instead of missed opportunities for vaccination during medical visits in low-income inner-city children, this resurgence has struck a different demographic group. The majority of cases who weren't vaccinated were intentionally not vaccinated because of personal or religious beliefs. In one of the communities where an outbreak occurred in San Diego, the level of personal belief exemptions was extremely high. The bigger yellow dots on this graph are individual schools with more than 20% of children exempting for vaccines. The measles outbreak emerged in one of those big yellow dot schools. Is that a coincidence? Well, we don't think so. Multiple studies, including one that came out this past year, show that exemption rates and disease clusters do go together. A very strong correlation in a Michigan data set for high rates of exemption and high pertussis rates. So not immunizing an individual can have consequences for the local community. Many states have requirements. In fact, all states have requirements for measles vaccine, and states have requirements for a number of other vaccinations. But New Jersey became the first and perhaps the last state to issue a requirement for influenza vaccination in daycare settings. It was not without protests, concerns, including this small protest you see here from the New York Times about this new mandate. We're lucky that on Wednesday afternoon, a representative from the New Jersey program is going to talk about the experience they've had implementing this requirement. It should be fascinating and something we can all learn from. Now, parents were not the only ones resisting control measures this past year. The microbes themselves have been fighting back, including everyone's favorite influenza virus. So far, fortunately, this year has been a mild influenza season. H1N1 strains have been dominating. But unfortunately, this year, virtually all of the H1N1 influenza virus strains are resistant to oseltamivir, also known as Tamiflu. In December, we issued new guidance for clinicians about how to manage influenza patients, including treatment with antivirals, in light of this resistance pattern. It's been just one of the headaches that the providers have been dealing with this year. For this audience, perhaps a more popular headache has been the furor over the combination vaccines. You may recall a Hib shortage we talked about at last year's meeting. We were excited that a new Hib-containing product came on the market, Pentacell. Unfortunately, for providers who'd been stocking Pediurix, the collision of these two combinations has been a challenge. And I think everyone here is waiting until, counting the days really, until more Hib combinations or Hib monovalent formulations are available on the market and it's a little bit easier to manage. But providers have had some other concerns as well, and this is what I call our long-running reality show. The cost to fully vaccinate keeps rising, and as Dr. Monroe shared, it costs over $1,400 now to fully vaccinate a girl through adolescence and over $1,100 to vaccinate a boy. This is a big challenge. The public sector Section 317 vaccine purchase money just hasn't stretched to as many people as it used to. The private sector has also been reeling. In the December issue of Pediatrics, the editorial read, "Is our vaccine system at risk for a future financial meltdown?" Everyone's having meltdowns. The vaccine system seems to be on the verge as well. A practitioner survey found almost half of doctors were delaying vaccine purchase due to the finances. And more than 10% had seriously considered stopping providing vaccines to privately insured children. Now, that was the case back 20 years ago when we had that resurgence of measles. Providers had to refer out for vaccination. We really don't want to go back to those days, so this is a serious concern. Providers aren't the only ones who've been struggling with some concerns. Parents have had a lot on their minds as well. This 2008 Consumer Health Styles survey looked at parents of young children and found these were the four most common concerns on their mind about immunizations. It's painful for children to get so many shots. My child's getting too many vaccines at one visit. Vaccines cause fever, and I just don't know whether the ingredients in vaccines are safe enough. These are interesting findings, but we don't know yet whether these concerns translate into changes in immunization behavior. Exciting news is that we have a vaccine acceptance module in the field this year, and we're going to be able to link that vaccine acceptance module results with our national immunization survey and begin to understand to what extent anxiety and concerns translate into different behaviors. It's going to be a really important set of information for us to follow going forward. Now, even if behavior isn't changing, there's a real strain on the patient-provider communication encounter right now. And we're really excited that this afternoon at the featured communication session, which is 2 o'clock in this ballroom, we have a nationally renowned psychologist speaker, Brian Flynn, who has taken crisis communication to a new level. He's consulted on issues like Ground Zero and the Columbine killings, and he's using his expertise to help us think through how to handle the immunization hesitancy and acceptance challenges that we have. It should really be a terrific session. Well, for those of you who were following the talk and not Twittering, you've probably noticed a little bit of doom and gloom, but there's actually a lot that we have to rejoice about. Lots of excellent things have happened this past year as well. So my remainder of the presentation will feature the good news. Our newest infant immunization program is already having impact. RotaTeq was licensed in 2006, and the rotavirus disease season of 2007-08 was the mildest in recorded history. Really, really good news. Now, the current season is not quite as good news as the past season. In red, you can see 2008-09, but it's actually still well below the minimum of any rotavirus season before vaccination. We're going to have a lot of information coming in the next few years and a chance to understand the short and long-term protection associated with the rotavirus vaccines we have available. This has been really a tremendous success story, particularly in light of recall of a previous rotavirus vaccine. You know, the idea that providers and parents are taking this vaccine and that we're seeing so much impact on disease. Hepatitis A immunization is also a remarkable story. With our initial strategy of vaccinating in 17 selected states and then broadening that nationwide and lowering the age to one, we have practically erased hepatitis A from the landscape. Fewer than 3,000 cases in the whole country this past year. Just an incredible success story. And the pneumococcal conjugate vaccine continues to show great impact. Pneumonia is one of the leading causes of hospitalization in children. But since the pneumococcal conjugate vaccine's been introduced, we've had a 35% drop in total pneumonia hospitalizations in children under 2. Just an incredibly good story for parents who don't have to have their children hospitalized from this disease. No applause for pneumococcal conjugate. What's going on? Okay, no more applause, sorry. Just, I used to work on pneumococcal conjugate, so we have to talk about that. That's my conflict of interest. In addition to the reduced disease, there's actually been some other results this past year that were important. The omnibus autism proceedings that we've all been following led to decisions in February. The MMR and thimerosal causation theory was rejected. Special Master said the... Whoa, okay. Okay. I guess you were following that story, so I don't have to go into it. And we've been reaching more people with immunizations, which is really what all of our efforts are about. Reaching more infants and toddlers with sustained high levels of immunization coverage. Varicella finally achieved 90% coverage for the first time. And we've actually been reaching more poor children as well. These are data for the 4-dose pneumococcal conjugate vaccine series, and we've essentially eliminated the poverty gap in this condition. So this is tremendous, tremendous good news. You know, I timed this, and it's going to really be off if we keep having these applause. So we're reaching more adolescents as well, with 20 percentage point increases in the meningococcal conjugate vaccine and Tdap in adolescents, and 25% of girls had begun the HPV vaccine series. This is incredible progress. Of course, there is lots more to do with adolescents. We'd like to get coverage much greater than this, but it's a really strong beginning. And something that is very close to my heart is that we're reaching more around the world. Life-saving HIV vaccines have been around for quite a while, but it's only now that they're finally getting to the poorest countries in the world. The HIV initiative is a Gavi-sponsored four-year initiative that CDC is part of, aimed at improving evidence-based decision-making about vaccine introduction in resource-poor countries. And the phenomenal news is that as of 2009, 66 of the 72 Gavi-eligible countries have decided or already introduced HIV vaccine. This is going to make a huge dent in the 386,000 children that die from HIV disease around the world each year. And it's really a phenomenal, long overdue, but really exciting event. But the economic hardships of the Gavi countries can seem fairly far away, and our country has been going through its own economic challenges. As you know, though, more than $700 billion were appropriated with the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. $300 million of this Recovery Act have been designated for the Section 317 program. CDC has been working very closely with the Department of Health and Human Services and our friends at the Office of Management and Budget. We look forward to being able to talk with you in the near future about the plans for these resources and help get them your way to help in the communities that are so much in need. The intent of the ERA funding is to help stimulate the economy and also improve health at the same time. But we also have hopes that it will be a down payment on health reform. The last time the country took a serious stab at health reform, we got the Vaccines for Children program, just a tremendous success that's now turning 15 this year. I want to let you know that tomorrow morning at the Tuesday plenary, we've invited Sarah Rosenbaum, who is a lawyer who helped draft the VFC legislation. She's going to look back at immunization policy with the VFC program, but also look forward about immunization policy and the future of health reform. It should be a really exciting presentation. So we're looking back a bit, 15 years for VFC and 20 years to that measles resurgence that we all remember. But we're looking back a little bit longer as well, looking back 50 years. 50 years ago, Eleanor Roosevelt inducted her late husband, Franklin, and 16 others into the Polio Hall of Fame, which is located in Warm Springs, Georgia. On the 50th anniversary, the Polio Hall of Fame recognized the Global Polio Eradication Initiative and inducted CDC, together with our spearheading partners, Rotary International, the World Health Organization, and UNICEF, into this incredible group. It was so moving to be part of this ceremony, which was presided by FDR's grandson and Jonas Salk's son, and to think about what you all do every day and the connection with the past. It was really a special experience. The Global Polio Eradication Initiative has reduced the incidence of that kind of paralysis that Judy's mom went through by 99% worldwide. There are 5 million people walking, not paralyzed today, because of the global eradication effort. But the eradication effort is not finished, and there are a few hotspots that are having quite a few challenges. Tomorrow morning at the plenary, we'll also hear from Dr. Hamid Jaffrey, who is a CDC assignee leading the polio wars in India, and he'll be giving us a story from the front line. It should be a phenomenal session. Going to Warm Springs and looking at all the history there and thinking of the economic hardships and the immunization challenges, sometimes it just seems like we're Sisyphus. That our task is to roll the boulder up the mountain only to have it roll back down again. And then we just roll the boulder up the mountain and then it comes back down again. Of course we feel that way. There are 17 vaccine preventable diseases that we're supposed to prevent now. There's 12,000 babies being born today and every day in the United States totally susceptible to vaccine-preventable diseases. There are thousands of people graduating from medical school and nursing school pretty much clueless to how to safely and effectively administer vaccines. And there's hundreds of thousands of school children just waiting to be part of one of those whooping cough outbreaks. Our job is pretty hard, but I didn't want to leave you with this kind of image or those kinds of statistics. So I looked to the literature, and I wanted to leave you with a Haitian saying, beyond mountains, there are other mountains, meaning that when you solve a problem, another problem presents itself, but then you solve that problem too. And instead of an arduous path, it can actually be a beautiful journey. So I wanted to leave you with that kind of image and these kinds of statistics. Because of what you do every day, because you are resourceful, reliable, recalcitrant sometimes, but also relentless. Because of what you do, these are the statistics that you should take home. The thousands of people who didn't lose a loved one, the thousands of families who aren't caring for a disabled child, because of what you do every day in your programs and your clinics and your offices. So thank you so much.